You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, it's Mike, and welcome to the new episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. We are doing a search out for comedy this time, and we are doing a comedy spotlight of George Carlin. That's right. The legendary George Carlin is going to be talked about this tonight. Everything from his early days as the hippy-dippy weatherman all the way to the cynical, beaten, wizened man who took a look at society, and man, did he have a way to put it. It was just amazing. Everything George Carlin did, everything that he explored is just, it's fantastic. And we have a great crew to talk all about it. And of course, we couldn't do the show without this man here sitting next to me, the man, the myth, the legend, who has a place for his stuff, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you, my friend?
Yes. Well, you know, your stuff is shit and my shit is stuff.
Well, of course. But if your shit is stuff and my stuff is shit, what does that make her stuff?
Well, her stuff is gold. You know that.
It's always the case. Yeah, I know. I know. As I was diving into it, it's like, I knew the answer right there. How are you this week, sir?
Yes, absolutely. I am great. I mean, this is going to be a great show. We're going to be talking and reminiscing about a legend, a legendary figure, not just of stand-up, but really of all pop culture and even beyond that. I mean, really, he's one of the great minds, I think, of our time. So it's going to be really fun. And we've got some new people who've never been on the station before. So that's always fun. You get the little rugrats running around. So, you know, getting in trouble and, you know, pressing the airlock button. And, you know, poor JD, he's going to have his work cut out for him after this.
I know. We let the kids onto the station. And you know what? The station is just never the same. And that's a good thing, actually, because change is good. But anyway, we digress, and we will, you know, talk all about George Carlin with the newbies, and we also have a great victim in the geek seat this week. It's just, it ties all together. Almost you could say it completes the room. I don't know where I got that one from.
Wow.
We want to hear from you guys. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Let's get started with this week's Rants and Raves, where we find about what's on our minds. Mr. Mike, what do you got for us?
Well, first and foremost, I want to we need to pay our respects. We pop culture, geekdom, you know, America lost a great talent over just today, actually. I think it just came out the wire today that we lost Margot Kidder. Most famous, of course, for playing Lois Lane. Probably one of the most famous Lois Lanes, I think. Obviously, you know, that, I mean, for our generation, that's our Lois.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's in the top two of my favorite Lois Lanes. So I think that's pretty awesome.
Okay. I have to ask. You said top two.
Yeah. Oh, so Noel Neal is my Lois Lane.
Right, right. And we just lost her, like, pretty recently as well.
Yes. It's not good if you're a Lois Lane. Watch out, Amy Adams. Watch out all the others, you know?
Yeah. She had quite an extensive career. I mean, her filmography is quite long, and between all her movies that she did in television. So even though she's, you know, known for that, obviously she was in a lot more than that. I think, you know, shortly around that same time, I remember she was in the first Amityville Horror, you know, the movie that depicted the, you know, the wackiness that happened there. So I think that that and a couple other things that she had done, Waldo Pepper with Robert Redford. I think, you know, that kind of made her like, just, you thought, OK, this is an actress that, boom, She's at the top. She's had kind of a rough personal life, a rough career. And so I think a lot of that health problems, very publicly, you know, she had that bipolar episode, which in some ways, you know, at the time, you know, I remember a lot of people kind of, you know, she was, you know, she showed up on late night comedy because a lot of people were joking about it. But I think it really did kind of help bring bipolar disorder to people's attention. And I know that she made that a point, I think, within her own autobiography, as well as some of her activism, that she made it a point to kind of, you know, make that a cause that she could, you know, she turned something that was, you know, kind of embarrassing, certainly not a great moment for her. She turned that into a positive, and I think she's to be commended for that as well. Not only her acting, but for that in and of itself, I think too. She will be missed. I see tons of pictures of certainly Lois Lane around the geek community celebrating her. You know, she and Chris. Where are Clark and Lois? And she set the tone for Lois Lane for years to come.
Oh, God, yes. She is a true blueprint for Lois Lane in the latter half of the 20th century. She was a modern take of Lois Lane.
Yeah, if you're going to be the, you know, love interest of Superman, you know, you've got to be able to hold your own. And she did. You know, against Christopher Reeve, who's quite arguably one of the best actors to ever play Superman of all time. So, and you know, she held her own. She didn't make it look awkward. I love Superman 2 is my favorite of the Superman franchise, and you know, the banter between them when they're Lois and Superman, but when they're Lois and Clark and they're staying at the honeymoon suite and they're doing that, you know, expose and they're working together. I mean, that's just really fun.
Well, it's interesting though, because for her, you know, my favorite line was in the first one though, you know, and Superman catches her when she fell out of the helicopter and, yeah. You know, I got you, miss. And she says, you've got me, but who's got you?
Yeah. I mean, it was famous. And, you know, when he first took her flying, I mean, that's a really famous scene. And it was, yeah, she was right there, part of that. So, very special moments with her. So, yes, it's sad that she is no longer with us, but, certainly she has, made her mark and she will live forever in a lot of those and other movies and other projects that she did. So that's sad. I do also want to mention, speaking of sad, and it's not quite as, you know, it's not a death of a person, but a lot of cancellations over the last week or so. A lot of the networks are cleaning house, man. It's that time of year. Oof. So we got some cancellation notices, some shows that are not going to be back. I know that one show in particular among the geek community that a lot of people are upset about, The Expanse. Sci-Fi said no more. It's too expansive. It's too big. So they canceled The Expanse. I never got a chance to watch The Expanse. I don't know if they've been allowed to end on a note that makes sense, like do a series finale. I always hate it. I mean, Lord knows, as a Farscape fan, I still have pissed off feelings about Sci-Fi, the way they treated that show. And I hope that The Expanse gets a chance to close out their series. So I hope Sci-Fi does that. So for fans everywhere that like that show, and maybe at some point I'll give it a try as well. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibilities, but I will tell you that if they don't get a chance to end it properly, then I probably won't spend time watching it, because I don't want to watch a show that just doesn't, you know, that doesn't have an ending. So that one was sad. We also saw cancellations of some Fox shows. Lucifer was canceled. I know a lot of fans were behind that. I really loved Lucifer's use in the DCU, especially in the Vertigo line, of course, with Sandman and his own book that Mike Carey wrote. I didn't watch the show. I must say that the show seemed like it was more of a procedural, so I stayed away from it. I understand from a lot of people that it actually became less a procedural and more like the comic. So I was kind of interested, but at that point it was a little too late. So again, I hope they get a chance to end it on their terms so that at least that show, because I think in this day and age, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't do anybody any favors if you've got a show that just doesn't have an ending, right? You need to have a finale, I think.
Oh, all good things have to come to an end.
Right, right. Of course, non-geek wise, Fox announced the cancellation of, is it Brooklyn Nine-Nine? Is that what it's called?
Yes.
I don't even know what it's called. I've never watched it. I'm not a big fan of Andy, right?
Mm-hmm. Andy Samberg.
Yeah. So I like some of his SNL work, but I didn't watch that show. It died, but quickly was revived by NBC, which led a lot of people to believe that one of the reasons that at least Fox was canceling a lot of shows was because they were trying to make room for shows that they only own, all the ones that they own, and that's it. In fact, they did announce that, you know, it's not all doom and gloom because some of the networks have announced shows that they are not canceling, that they renewed. And one of the shows that I was surprised to see renewed was Gotham. I thought that Fox was cleaning house with shows that they own that didn't own themselves. And I thought, oh, that doesn't mean well, much for Gotham. But as it turns out, Gotham is going to get one more season and it's going to be their last. So I guess Fox is like, OK, we'll do one more with you. And I think the ratings are still pretty strong on Gotham. So that's a Thursday night. So I think it usually goes up against. Well, no, it goes up. It's the same night as Arrow and Supernatural, I think. So. And another show that I was convinced was going to be canceled that was got a new season. Actually, two more shows that comic related that I thought were dead. And I was sad because I like both of them, but yet they got new seasons. So I'm very happy. And that is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is one of those shows. They certainly have been acting this season like this is going to be their last season.
Oh, exactly. Especially, you know, with what's happening with you know, the series, but I don't want to spoil anything, so I'm not naming any names at a certain main character. Will they live or will they die? But they are surprisingly tying Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. very nicely into the Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what the finale is like. And if Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. comes back, it's going to be on at a time before the next Infinity or before the next Avengers movie. So what is that going to look like? Are they going to, are they going to be around still? Are they going to like go to the future again, be blown back to the past? Are they going to, you know, I mean, who knows what they've got planned? So that should be kind of interesting. And then another show that I like a lot that got renewed and I was very happy for is iZombie. I kind of feel like the last few years they've been on the bubble and I've really enjoyed the heck out of that show. And I was hoping that it would stick around, but you know, I'm not kidding myself. I'm like, nah, it's probably going to be gone this year. And yet it's coming back too. So I'm very happy about that. So there's some renewals. There's a lot of shows that we still haven't heard about I think actually most shows do really know if they're going to be back next year or not, actually, now that I mentioned that. But was there any other shows that I missed as far as getting canceled or renewed, Mike, that you were interested in?
Most of them you've hit. You know, I was really surprised that Tim Allen's show was canceled by ABC and got picked up by Fox.
But, oh, right. So they swapped, huh? Or so they picked up a show, did they?
Mm-hmm. I am shocked they're continuing The Simpsons. Huh. Well, it's a moneymaker, yes, but when has the last time The Simpsons has been anything relative or relevant or anything like that? And, you know, basically, you know, I'm not shocked by, you know, some of the things that have been canceled. There were some shows that, you know, were freshman shows that just didn't, you know, make it or break it. You know, I wasn't shocked when they announced that Inhumans isn't coming back, you know, or, you know, there was a couple others. And, you know, it'll be just interesting to see what is coming, though. Also, you know, rumor going around, and they've already announced, actually, there's going to be a new Magnum PI starting this fall.
Yes, yeah, there's going to be a new Magnum PI, and I believe a new Cagney and Lacey as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, come on, folks, let's get some original stuff going. I don't think there is any new superhero shows starting in the fall. I heard, you know, in the Blantyverse that they just announced that Doom Patrol is going to be happening, but there's nothing.
Can you believe that? But I think, isn't that going to be just on, is that going to be on CW or is that going to be on DC, like their direct stuff?
I don't know. They haven't announced that yet. So,
gotcha. But can you believe it? Doom Patrol?
Doom Patrol. I'm shocked. But, you know, they won't be able to use Beast Boy because he's in the Titans. And I think he's going to be on the Titans TV show.
That they're doing. I know he's on the Titans TV show.
So I know because he originally was part of the Doom Patrol. But it'll be interesting if they do like the Elastigirl, Robot Man, and Negative Man.
Well, I think the original four. So you have to have Robot Man. You have to have Negative Man. You have to have, I can't think of the guy's name. The guy in the wheelchair, right? The bald guy.
Chief.
Like the old guy in the wheelchair.
He was the chief.
Yes.
He was Professor Niles Calden or something like that.
Yep. And then Garth's mom, right? So.
Elastigirl.
Yep. So those four. But you know how they'll interact and what they'll do with them, you know, I trust Berlanti. So if it's that production company, then I don't think they've, you know, done a bad show yet.
Okay.
So, I mean, I love all the shows that are on the CW. I mean, some are better than others, but I think there's a consistency there. And I'm even including Riverdale in that. I love Riverdale. I think that's a great show. They might do a different take on it because they've done that obviously with some things. But I trust them because to me, that Berlanti and his team has put together a level of consistency across all those shows that I trust them. So that's why I'm excited. If Doom Patrol is coming and it's Berlanti produced, then I'm going to think that that's pretty awesome.
Well, exactly. And, you know, Berlanti has done well by us. I think maybe some of the original shows maybe should start winding down maybe. But, you know, I'm curious to see what they're going to do with, you know, like there's supposed to be game-changing changes at the end of the season for Arrow and blah, blah, blah. You know, we'll see.
Huh. You know. Yeah, they all kind of like to predict that. But, you know, yeah, well, like you said, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We'll have to see. But then you also have, you know, what Cable stuff that's happening. And, you know, it's pretty darn awesome, you know, what we got coming. I'm just looking forward to as thing comes, you know, this fall. We got some pretty amazing stuff that we haven't even talked about. You know, we haven't talked about the return of Outlander. We haven't talked about the return of Doctor Who this fall. So, you know, we got a lot to look forward to. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see.
Yeah. I mean, it looks, you know, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I know that shows have to go, like, you know, and I don't behoove that because the network got to do what it's got to do. And sometimes we don't want shows to go too long. So it's kind of sad sometimes when they come out of the blue. My feeling is that if a network's going to cancel a show, especially one that's been on for, I think, 3 or 4 years or more, they really owe it to their fans and the future of that show to let them close it out and do something so that, you know, when it's on Netflix or when it's on wherever streaming, that people are going to want to watch it because they're going to want to see it from the beginning to the end. They don't want to watch a show that just doesn't, like, have an ending. So.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I want to see, you know, like we said, all stories wrap up, even, you know, Once Upon a Time is wrapping up. So it'll be just interesting to see. Maybe this might be the last season for Arrow, possibly. You know, 6 seasons is a good number to wrap up at. You know, Star Trek did that with like Next Gen and also with Voyager.
They went 7.
Did they? I forgot those episodes. So it's 6 for me.
Nope. The original series went three seasons, and then all the others, Voyager, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, they all went seven. And then Enterprise went
four.
I don't,
about that. We don't have to talk about that. Exactly.
So, but yes. So, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I'm, like I said, the shows that, I'm very happy that got saved from, the bells of doom, so to speak. I'm very happy that a lot of mine did. And, I feel for those whose shows did not get picked up.
Of course, you always have to feel for those type of people. And, you know, you always, there's shows that we've done episodes, you know, on, you know, shows that should have gotten another season. And it's always like one of those frustrating things when a show you love just doesn't get it and doesn't get a continuation. And you just bang your head against the wall or against the desk or something just because you want to see what happens to your characters you love and such. But, you know, there's always comics, and we're not even going to talk about fanfic. So that gets us into too much trouble with the fanfic stuff.
Yeah, we're not. Yeah, that's I think it's time to wrap up.
Yeah, exactly. I think we'll wrap up the segment. And so, you know, is there anything that you guys are missing? Is there anything that you wanted to see that isn't coming back or are very happy that is coming back? Please write us, earthstation1@esonetwork.com. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with the Geek Suit segment.
Some people call me a space cowboy. Yeah. Some people be the gangster love. Some people call me Maurice.
Woo! Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. Well, I think we finally have a contender to take the number one crown from Infinity War at the box office, and that's Deadpool 2. The first Deadpool movie was kind of a surprise hit based on kind of a rocky start for the character. Ryan Reynolds first kind of sort of appeared as Deadpool in that Wolverine origin stories that didn't necessarily go over too well with fans. But against the odds, he got a second chance to play the character in an R-rated comedy, and fans loved this one a lot more. I actually enjoyed Deadpool, the first movie, but didn't love it. I thought that kind of once you got past all the wacky humor and kind of some of the edgy comedy, it was more just kind of a standard origin story. So that's why I'm actually really excited about the sequel, because now we've got the origin story out of the way, and I think they can just have fun and play around more with the character. Will hopefully be a little more loose and unexpected. So really looking forward to this one. The trailers just look absolutely hilarious. Looks like there's going to be some fun fight scenes as well. So I've already got my ticket. Really looking forward to it. And on DVD this week, we have another big superhero coming out, and that's Black Panther. It has just been super amazing and exciting to watch how audiences have responded to this movie at the box office. I mean, just kept going and going and going, earning money, and it's just been amazing to see. I think that speaks not only to how much people continue to love and support the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but also about how much this diverse cast in a blockbuster movie really touched and hit home for fans. So kudos to Marvel. If you haven't gotten a chance to see this movie yet, definitely pick up a copy on DVD. I'm planning to add it to my Marvel collection for sure. And that's it for this week, although there are lots more summer movies to come. We're actually starting to see some of the early reactions for Solo, A Star Wars Story, and this is one that I was really nervous about based on some of the drama going on behind scenes, some of the switch-up with the directors and things like that. But the good news is that even though this one may not be flawless, it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun, and the responses from critics, at least so far from the early buzz, seem to be positive. So I'm looking forward to this, and of course, lots more great movies coming along after that as well. But in the meantime, if you're looking for more entertainment-related content, be sure to check out my blog, boxofficebuzzab.wordpress.com.
Hey there, folks. My name is JC Della Torre.
And I'm Rita Della Torre.
And we are Transmissions from Atlantis, an original member of the ESO network, and we are excited to tell you all about our podcast.
Well, it's everything science fiction, fantasy, horror.
And every single episode will have a segment of Doctor Who. Let's give everybody a taste.
I have my 2 minutes.
Yes.
Okay then. So no interrupting.
Go ahead.
Fine.
You're using up your 2 minutes.
Shut up. You're interrupting me. Stop it.
You're now up to 50 seconds. This was worse than Kill the Moon.
It was not worse than
Kill the Moon. I would take the moon as an egg before I would take a bunch of trees, sprout up overnight, save the earth, and then magically... And where did the trees go? Where did the trees go? Yes, Transmissions from Atlantis.
Class.
Classy sci-fi pop culture discussions. Check us out, transmissionsfromatlantis.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Now we are here for the Geek Seat segment, and our guest this week is comedian Kevin Goatee.
Hey Mike and Mike, how's it going?
Howdy, welcome to the station. For those people who may not have heard of you before, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a comedian in New York City for over 8 years. You can mostly find me on my show on Amazon Video, Comics Watching Comics, season 6. Should be out hopefully in, I will say, early June. So look forward to that, or even late May if we get lucky. But yeah, Comics Watching Comics seasons 1 through 5 are on right now. You can also catch me on the Sportsbook Box Office Podcast on a little bit of a hiatus right now, but you can go back to on iTunes or Google Play and listen to former episodes and listen to us talk about sports and films. KevinGoatee.com. On Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, of course, Comics Watching Comics on Amazon.
Awesome. This is, of course, a geek-related podcast, so we're not really familiar with the term sports. Could you describe that a little bit?
You know, where people who display certain athletic prowess do more than sit in a basement and play Dungeons & Dragons.
I see.
Oh, but Mike, hold on. We know what wrestling is. It's cool.
That is an activity, not a sport, but...
Oh, very cool. Well, congratulations. The Comics Watching Comics, big success. I mean, that's been on a while. That's quite a number of seasons. That's a pretty good accomplishment. Tell us about
the
concept.
Thank you very much. I'm really proud. It's been great. We're actually in talks with possibly getting it into a casino, a very well-known chain of casinos, to do live shows there across the country. If that happens, holy shit. I'll never do your podcast again because I'm too busy. Just kidding. But thank you for the compliment. Yeah, well, I'm very excited, very pleased with it. It's been a great ride so far. It's definitely not over, and I'm very proud of what it's been so far.
Yeah, well, tell us about how it started, what the concept came from.
The concept is where I take a bunch of intermediate comics, videotape. What am I, old? I guess I am. Tape them. While at intermediate comics do 5 minutes each. We do a whole taping in one day for 2 seasons. I take that footage, bring it back to my house where I, and along with other, not saying I'm all, you know, super duper tenured, but I've got a little bit of tenure in comedy. We watch the footage. We watch, we praise, we critique it. We offer advice. And if they're terrible, we shit on them if need be. And at the end of every season, we pick a winner to perform at a Gotham Comedy Club in Manhattan. And they perform along with some of the other panelists, winning comedians from other seasons. And also some people, we also give I also call it redemption section, where I give a few people who really bombed a chance to redeem themselves on the live show as well. Now here's where the twist for the show comes in. Like I said, we pick the winning comic at the end of every season. The home audience plays along too. They vote on their favorite panelists that they want to see come back to the following season or so. We actually just taped the panelist episode where we had the season 7, whereas the all-star panel edition, where I had all panelists from previous seasons who the fans loved the most. So at Comics Watching is where you can vote on your favorite panelists that you want to see come back to the next seasons.
Very cool. That's wow. That keeps you busy.
You bet your ass it does.
Well, very cool. And obviously, yes, you're touring the club circuit around the New York, New Jersey area mainly.
Yeah, I'm in Jersey. I'm in New York. I'm in Connecticut. I'm all over the place.
How is the comic circuit these days?
I wish I was out more. I shouldn't say all over the place. I'm really not nationwide touring comedian like that yet. We'll see. But it's odd. I definitely there is some change when it comes to in regard to the audience and their sensitivity towards certain issues and such. So it's I think people just need to realize to sit down, shut up, and listen to jokes. And your opinion is not really warranted in a comedy club. If you don't like what you're hearing, that's cool. Of course, you're right to do that. But don't vocalize it, and don't raise a stink about it on social media. You may like everything you hear. And just like at home, if you don't like a TV show you're watching, just change the channel. That's it.
There are so many different styles. Do you use one particular or adhere to one particular sort of stand-up style? Or?
I would say, yeah, I mean, you get my persona. I mean, it's going to sound generic and trite, but you're getting me on stage, and that's on me throughout my set. So to answer your question, I would say yes, you are getting one style. Right. It may be a conglomerate of other different maybe comedic influences I've had, but it's one style, which is me.
Gotcha. Well, very cool. Well, I know that, yeah, like so many other things, it's certainly not easy, man, it sounds like you are got it going on as far as the YouTube, and it sounds like you're starting some other shows, correct?
Well, yeah, we're trying to pitch a show to the NFL called Comics Watching Football, where you guessed it, a bunch of comedians watch football, and it's an alternative way of watching sports instead of having the broadcasters, you know, do the X's and O's. We're watching the game in live in real time, while offering our own jokes and comments to the end while watching. So that's something different we're trying to pitch to the NFL. And License to Kill, No Odd Job, I've done one episode on Twitch where we played James GoldenEye on Nintendo 64, and I think we're going to expand on that and play other classic arcade games on Twitch. We kick back and we play video games, so...
Gotcha. Yeah, because I saw the title of that one. I didn't know if it was James Bond. I knew, obviously, it was James Bond related, but I was wondering what the take on it was. Because, you're a big, pretty big movie buff as well.
You are correct, sir.
So I would imagine, yeah. So I didn't know if you were like sort of your take on the James Bond franchise or something else. So.
Yeah, no, it's again, when you play, I don't know if you guys have played GoldenEye, but that's like a game mode. Is a License to Kill, and people would declare you, no one can play as Odd Job, because Odd Job in the game is obviously like in the Goldfinger film, a little guy where you can just run around and easily avoid being shot. So people felt that was a good way to cheat so they could avoid the bullet streams. And so that way the rule is we would ever play was License to Kill, No Odd Job. So License to Kill is a one-shot death and No Odd Job, hence the title. But I think we're gonna expand on that and then play different other games where you classic arcade games as well.
Very cool. Well, I see that Mike is ready. The geek seat awaits, sir. So it's your time to shine, man. And I will just, don't mind me, I'm just strapping you down just because it's a little bit, it goes down a little bit easier that way.
I'm ready for the geek seat. Let's see what you guys have.
Are you sure you're ready for the geek seat? So many people say they're ready for it.
I pledge a fraternity for 10 and a half weeks. Nothing can be as worse than that.
Ooh, you know, I love the cockiness. It's pretty awesome. You know? All right, kid. You ready? Kevin?
You bet your ass. Let's go.
Your first question in the geek seat, of course, is the traditional easy softball question. What geeks you out the most?
Too long of a list. I love old school video games. I love 80s, 80s and 90s cartoons, I guess, from a kid. Still love watching the old ones like Transformers and G.I. Joe or 1A and 1B. Old school video games, even 80s and 90s films to a degree. I would say those are my, that geeks me out the most.
What turns your geek off?
The uber nerd shit, the Dungeons and Dragons stuff, the Pokemon, Magic the Gathering, that's not up my alley at all.
I can understand that. A lot of people feel that way, actually. What about it, though? You know, just because it's just over the top, or?
Yeah, it just embodies all of the geeks that you just want to, you know, there could be the nicest people in the world, but you see them playing you know, Dragon Ball Z, and you just want to slap them in their man boobs and go, play a sport, you bitch, you know, something like that.
What's your favorite geek out moment?
What's my fate currently? Could you laugh at that a little bit?
Yeah, well, something that would just be like, oh my God, look at that, you know. Something throughout your life when something just like totally blew your mind because of, and you just geeked out over.
I would say this is going to be a super deep cut, but I had to go to Cincinnati for a work meeting last year. Got to go to the Reds game. There you go, that park, real nice park. And one of the walls had this huge mural of all these 80s like toys, like I played as a kid. And if you watch the show on Netflix, The Toys That Made Us, show you that same wall in Cincinnati. And it had like Mask, G.I. Joe, Transformers, He-Man, all that shit on there. And I flipped my lid to this my old coworker, and she could give two fucks. But I was like, oh, this is the coolest. I should have taken a picture. I did take a picture. I sent it to a couple of my friends. I should have saved it, though. My phone got deleted because I had to get a new phone. But that was super cool. I loved it. And too bad no one else in that moment could share that geeky moment of geekdom with me.
Of course, I could totally understand that. But let's look at the other side of that, though. What was your most disappointing geek out moment? Something that you just saw and was like, oh, that was a piece of, you know.
I got a tie. I would say every one of the Transformers, actually a three-way tie. The Transformers sequels were shit. The G.I. Joe film was, the G.I. Joe films were shit. The He-Man film was shit. And I was very disappointed in Ready Player One. I read that book, I just reread it again last week, probably the fourth or fifth time. And it disappointed. I mean, Spielberg, I love Spielberg, but he really dropped the ball on that. That film took out way too much from the film, and his edit just did not do the book justice at all.
Nope, I totally understand that. I totally understand. A few people we knew said the same thing.
Well, they're smart.
What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
Fictional character? Oh, Christ. Jack Burton from Big Trouble in Little China.
Who?
Nice.
Who?
Or exactly. Not new Han Solo, old Han Solo, please.
Okay, gotcha. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
Would I like to meet the least?
Yes. Who would you not like to meet?
I know. I've got a few in mind. I would say Chip and Spike and Sparkplug from the Transformers cartoons, because they were useless. And they always screwed up the Autobots missions, and they just brought nothing to the table, and I couldn't stand them. It's them and Snarf from the Thundercats.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Okay. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Pose, I mean, no thank you. Geek word?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I like Excelsior from the X-Men. That's nice. That's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What's your ideal geek occupation?
Ideal geek occupation, boy. If they were to let me in on, if I got to rewrite one of my favorite cartoons that they made into a film, if I got to rewrite the G.I. Joe film, G.I. Joe films, the Transformers sequels, Thundercats, I got to rewrite one of those kind of films, I would be pretty damn happy.
Nope, totally understand that. What geek occupation would you not like to do?
Anything where I have to appear at Comic-Con with the rest of those nerds.
Okay, well.
You guys are like, fuck you, I'm there every year.
Yeah, and no.
I can just tell by your tone. I was like, oh, they don't like that answer, but okay. All right.
Yeah, you know, this is your segment. You can answer it any way you want, man.
Right.
All right. Kevin, your final question in the geek seat.
Yes, sir.
What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
Oh, my God. if I got to somehow go back in time, put adult Kevin in 1983 and get Princess Leia in that metal bikini from Return of the Jedi, I don't think I could get any better than that and get a chance to bang her as Princess Leia in that metal bikini.
Of course. Well,
I'm sure every dude is probably, I'm sure all the dudes have said that one, but that just, I don't know how you cannot want to.
Of course not.
You know, complete that challenge.
I could see that. Well, Kevin, congratulations, sir. You have made it through the geek seat. Congratulations, sir. Doesn't mean we're untying you or anything, but Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young man what he's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $60.08.
Woo.
Excellent.
Congratulations, Kevin. You've made it. So one more time, want to plug your Amazon show?
I would love to. Thanks again, guys. Mike and Mike, I really appreciated the time here. And good questions. I like them. Definitely better than the most cookie cutter ones I've been receiving. So good stuff on your parts. Comics, watching comics, Instagram, Facebook, at Comics Watching on Twitter, and comicswatchingcomics.com if you want to get a t-shirt. Comics Watching Comics season 6 should be up, like I had said, in the next couple weeks, probably by June, early June for sure. Maybe we can sneak it into late May. And Twitter at Comics Watching, like I had said. Kevin Goatee. At Kevin Goatee, KevinGoatee.com, KevinGoatee.com, Kevin Goatee Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and cross your fingers that the NFL really likes Comics Watching Football, and they get me out of my shitty day job.
Amen, brother.
That I could totally understand. Well, thank you so much, my friend.
Mike and Mike, thanks again. I really had a good time talking to you fellas. Appreciate it. And tag me on social media. I'm glad that you reshare, retweet, all that good stuff.
Of course.
Absolutely.
All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment.
Hey, everybody. Iconic Rock Talk Show moment. This is Michelle. And 3 weeks after it happened, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony did premiere on HBO. If you're a fan of any of the inducted artists, definitely check it out. Also, there were some very, I was going to say killer, but that's a bad pun. There were some amazing, stunning performances. Killers did American Girl, Andra Day, and Brittany Howard paying tribute to Nina Simone and Sister Rosetta Tharpe. Definitely worth checking out. It's probably in your on-demand service, and it'll be replayed constantly. So, you know, give it a watch. It was very interesting. My only experience seeing the actual event and then the edited version, just how well they crafted this perfectly paced alternate reality out of what happened. And one good thing about seeing the edited version, you escape some of the bloviating speeches, not all of it, but most of it, and you also get excused from most, not all, but most of Howard Stern's singing, so there is that. One band that a lot of people, me included, feel should be in the Hall of Fame, and they have been snubbed for years, is The Smiths, and Johnny Marr of The Smiths has a new album called Call the Comet, due out June 15th. And the single called Hi Hello has just been dropped. A video with just Johnny Marr alone with a guitar in a what looks like a huge park in the middle of a bleak winter day. The song is very Smithy. If you're a fan, you'll like it. Johnny Marr acknowledges this. He says it was the song that sounded most like what people know him for. So check that out. Ticketmaster, we all love Ticketmaster, has announced an investment in a company called Blink Identity. They make facial recognition software that they claim can ID a person, not even looking directly at the camera, within a half a second. Not creepy at all. It seems like what they're looking for, and it's not going to happen anytime in the near future, if at all. But the potentiality of totally ticketless admissions. Now, you would probably associate your face with an account voluntarily, but it means Ticketmaster has your identity in their database and the venues have surveillance software. Do we really want this much convenience, people? Residencies are a thing, and especially in Vegas, but Springsteen just won a Tony for the one he did on Broadway. But it's A Marriage Made in Heaven. See what I did there? Queen and Adam Lambert are joining the Vegas fray, announcing a three-week residency at the Park Theater at the Park MGM. 10 performances between September 1st to 22nd. Tickets, if they're available, I don't know what the situation is. Tickets range from $79 to $350 if you're headed to Sin City. One thing that, gosh knows, I have had to report way too much. We've seen way too much of it. Cornell, Chester Bennington. We've lost a lot of performers just over the last couple of years to suicides. And last week it was reported that Frightened Rabbit's lead singer Scott Hutchinson took his own life. He was missing for 24 hours, and it did not end happily, unfortunately. In the UK, an organization called Help Musicians UK has created a phone hotline as part of its Music Minds Matter campaign. They launched this last July after Chester Bennington took his life. This hotline is designed to help those in the music industry, not just artists, but people in management, working on tour crews, people who work for labels. There was a survey done in 2014, and they surveyed more than 2,000 musicians across genres, and about 500, I think it was like 495, reported anxiety and panic attacks, and they think those numbers are even higher now. So anytime there's mental health support, it's a great thing. Just in case you or anyone you know would be interested in that number, it is 0808-802-8008 in the UK. This has been the Iconic Rock Talk Show moment. The blog is iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com, and we will check you out next time.
I had kind of an interesting morning this morning. I call it interesting. I use that word because I don't have a nice day anymore. Frankly, I don't bother with them. I feel as if I've outgrown the nice day. Let someone else have a few. I've had my share. Why should I be hogging all the really nice ones? So I feel like I'm beyond the nice day now. Of course, people still want me to have one. Everybody wants me to have a nice day.
Have a nice day!
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Would you give me my fucking change, please? Some people are really insistent. I said, have a nice day! All right, okay, goddammit, all right! That's the trouble with have a nice day. It puts all the pressure on you. Now you've got to go out and somehow manage to have a good time. All because of some loose-lipped cashier. Have a nice day. Maybe I don't feel like having a nice day. Maybe, just maybe, I've had 63 nice days in a row. And by God, I'm ready for a crappy day. Let someone wish me a crappy day. I never hear that. Have a crappy day! That's no problem at all. All you have to do is get up some mornings. There's no planning involved. You know the trouble with that nice day stuff for me is that word nice. It's just such a soft, kind of flabby word. You know, there's no character to it.
Nice. Isn't he nice? Oh, he is so nice. And she's nice too. Isn't that nice?
It's like fine. How are you?
Fine.
Bullshit. Nobody's fine. Hair is fine. How's your hair?
Fine.
That makes a lot more sense to me. Some guys are great. You ever hear that? How are you? Great. Isn't this great? God damn, this is great. Look, they're going to kill that guy. Isn't that great? Not me. I'm not nice. I'm not fine. I'm not great. People ask me how I am. I say I'm fairly decent. No superlatives. Nothing to gossip about. I say I'm relatively okay. Or moderately neato. Then they have to ask their children how I am. If I'm in a particularly jaunty mood, I'll look them right in the eye and say, I'm not unwell, thank you. Which pisses them off because they have to figure that one out for themselves. But anyway.
Welcome back, everyone. And now it's time for a spotlight on comedian George Carlin. And with us to talk all about Carlin and his comedy is returning to the podcast straight from Chicken Town is Kevin Eldridge.
Hey, guys.
Howdy, sir. Long time no listen. Or I've actually listened to you, but you haven't been on the station, so.
I've not been on Earth Station 1 in a while. I've just been very busy with the Flopcast down in Chickentown, so it's good to be back up here.
Well, it's kind of weird. We actually heard ourselves on his show the other day.
Yeah, I did. Wow, yeah, you got all the way to the end of the show, didn't you? I did steal a few seconds
the one.
Out of your show.
I am the one who made it to the end of your show.
I kind of grabbed some audio from you guys just to have a little fun with you.
Well, hey, the after show is the best part. And that's a secret, right? So
it is a secret.
We don't want to tell anybody else. But and we also have two people who are new to the station. Let's welcome first Ashley Sanders.
Yo, yo, yo.
Howdy. How's it going? Welcome.
It goes well. It goes well. Thank you, man. Thank you guys for having me on. How are you guys?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tell us just a little bit about yourself.
I do some podcasting. I have a show called Who's This, and we're launching a whole Who's This network, and it's basically a network for people who want to start businesses but have no money.
Oh, wow. That's so many of us.
Wow,
so
that should be us right there.
Exactly. That's our entire listening audience, so kudos. We also have with us Nate Ward. Nate, welcome to the station.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I run a podcast network called Inked Geek Studios. We do 3 to 4 shows a week, depending on the week. And I've been podcasting for, it'll be 4 years in 3 weeks.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Hasn't gotten to you yet, huh?
No. It's become, I mean, it's had its ups and downs, but it's become a passion. And I've met so many great people and I've made so many friends doing it that it's something that, regardless of how much money I make or how much money I spend,
That's more like it right there.
Yeah, exactly. It's worth doing. It's something that my co-owner of the studio has been my best friend for 18 years. So it's something that we get to do together. So it's pretty cool.
Wow. That's very cool. Must be nice to have a co-host that's actually a friend. So that'd be nice. So
get moving. Come on, you bum.
All right. Well, we are here to talk about George Carlin, and to call him a stand-up comedian is just an understatement. So I'm glad you guys are with us to talk all about Carlin. As we usually do when we start off our spotlights, it's best to just sort of talk about where we first were introduced to our spotlight focus. And we'll start with you, Ashley. Where did you first encounter George Carlin? What's your earliest memory with George?
I had to be like 8 when I first was introduced to George Carlin. It was my dad. He's big into comedians and everything. But he sat me down and he told me, he goes, watch this guy. Watch him. And I was just like, okay, he's just a dirty man who says dirty words. And he goes, okay. Now I'm going to ask you some questions afterwards. And we watched the Carlin special. And he asked me, he said, what's the difference between him and every other comedian? And I said, he says a lot of curse words. And my dad was like, no, the difference is this man is truly revolutionary. And I do a little bit of stand-up comedy and I'm kind of funny. So as I got older, Carlin was always someone I went back to for truths, for insight. He's basically like a mentor to anybody who encourages, free thinking and actual deep thought. So that's really where I got introduced to him.
That's some good parenting right there.
Gosh, yeah. I wish I was adopted by him.
Nate, what about you?
So I am in a similar boat. I wasn't quite as young. So Christmas of 99, I was 14 and or 15. Yeah. And my mom had bought me the You Are All Diseased album, which just came out May of that year. And I had never listened to it before. You know, I saw him as Mr. Conductor on, what was it, Shining Time Station. But I had never listened to it. And my mom was very much in the vein of, you know, like censorship wasn't a thing. Like she got me into like Silence of the Lambs and things like that. So it was kind of like enjoy what you enjoy. And I remember listening to it. And I mean, I can't quote you an exact number and be accurate, but I listened to that whole album at least three times that day. And I absolutely fell in love with the comedy and then went back to, you know, Back in Town, Jamming in New York, things like that. And it he shaped my life. Like it's and I say that not in kind of a hyperbole type way, but he is a big reason that I'm an atheist. He is a big reason that I don't trust government. He's a big reason I don't trust other adults. just for the sake of most people have an agenda, and he kind of taught you that. And it was to learn from him and to learn to listen to everyone but question everything was a big part of his message, and it really sunk in with me.
Wow, to be I forgot that, you know, that a whole bunch of generations are introduced to him as Mr. Conductor, which just seems surreal to me, but yet appropriate. So, I mean, that's again, good parenting right there. So, awesome. Kevin, what about you?
Yeah, you know, I was trying to think where I first became exposed to George Carlin, and it was one of two places because it happened, it would have been right around the same time. One would be the Dr. Demento show, because I got way into Dr. Demento, of course, in the early 80s. And the doctor plays mostly funny music, of course. And you guys know I went way down that road into the funny music scene. But he also would play some stand-up comedy clips, not a lot, but just a handful. But there were some Carlin clips that Dr. Demento would play very regularly back then, and it was stuff that really worked in nice short bursts and stuff that was clean enough for the radio. So stuff like Baseball Versus Football and Icebox Man, they called it, where he just kind of does a lot of food jokes, Place for My Stuff, I think, a few things like that. So that was one spot where I really started hearing some of the great radio safe Carlin bits. And the other place would have been David Letterman, because I was on board right from the beginning of Late Night with David Letterman from the early 80s forward. And Carlin was a regular guest there, and The Tonight Show as well, of course. So that was where I saw an awful lot of Carlin all through the 80s also.
Yeah, sure, sure. Mike, I'm reminded once again how much younger all our guests usually are.
Yes, 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 I know.
Because I know that your answer is probably going to be similar to mine. Where did you experience George for the first time?
For the very first time, probably, like Kevin, was probably The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. But I also remember George Carlin on Saturday Night Live.
That's what I was going to say. SNL, like he just, yeah, it seemed like he was, it seemed like not, I don't know if I was there for the first episode because he was the host of the first episode. I don't think I was there like watching it then, but certainly he seemed to be in like a staple, like a recurring member of the cast.
Well, exactly. Well, he was for a little bit, but then Steve Martin took up more of his role that. But George was very unique because, you know, my parents, it's no secret, they were hippies and they were very much into counterculture, and they used to buy the George Carlin albums. They actually went to go see George Carlin, you know, in concert probably from like 1973 on, every couple of years. And my dad actually even had dinner with him once because my dad was a music rep for Buddha Records at one point. And so it was, you know, hearing the stories, George Carlin this, George Carlin this. Yeah, he cursed, but his jokes were so gosh darn funny. And for even somebody who was 7 or 8 years old at the time, and just loving his stuff because he made fart jokes. He, you know, he talked about growing up in New York City and I was a New Jersey kid. You know, it was always funny that. And then, you know, in the early 80s, we got HBO probably like 1980. And those were the beginning of the George Carlin specials.
Yeah. I mean, his first one was in 1977 and he did a series of them. And it was weird because when I went to do some research just to refresh you know, my memory of some Carlin bits and everything, I was like, my first instinct was to pull up HBO because I'm like, HBO has everything on HBO ever, right? Mm-hmm. No, they don't have any Carlin anymore. And I'm like, he was such an institution for HBO. But thank you, Amazon Prime, because Amazon Prime has his complete library. So if you have Amazon Prime, you can watch every single one of his specials and then some.
Oh, exactly. All weekend.
For free.
So. We were literally also, you know, with Alexa, we have Amazon Music. So I said, hey, Alexa, play George Carlin. And we listened to like 4 hours straight of George Carlin. And it was from all the different albums and such.
In addition to Saturday Night Live, though, I mean, for me, my earliest memories about George Carlin are the records. And to me, like in my mind, I remember three comedians at the time. That this was when I was in junior high, early high school. And, you know, we couldn't get enough of three comedians in particular: Martin Mull, Steve Martin, and George Carlin. Like, those were like the trifecta. Like, that was like the three, like, guys that were really, I mean, we were in junior high, right? So we were like laughing at the fact that they could curse and they were making all sorts of, you know, sex jokes and everything like that. But I think, you know, in particular, really with Martin and Carlin more than anybody, I mean, they were rising above just like toilet humor. I mean, you could tell that there was something else there, even if we couldn't really put our finger on it at the time. We just knew that these guys were much better than some of the others that we were listening to, right? That came around. So, yeah, so huge, huge influence that way. I mean, I didn't go into comedy, but I certainly took a lot of the lessons. And the fact that the two things that I think I think of most when I think of his routines in particular are, A, he feels like nothing is sacred, literally. Nothing is sacred as far as his topics goes. And two, he just has a masterful use of the English language. Every one of his routines, it's not just a, you know, an old man's rant. Like, it's just so well, like every word is carefully placed. And it just, he makes it seem so easy when he just talks as if this is a conversation, but you know that it's months and months or weeks and weeks, certainly, of getting that right word right and that right tone, because he'll switch his voice up, you know, and have little conversations with himself. It's very complex stuff, I think. So I definitely understand, you know, how he's an influence to comedians still to this day. But as far as sort of, you know, routines that maybe struck you, obviously there are some really ones that are really famous, but let's start with you, Ashley. What kind of routines did you really adhere to? Did you think that's magic, that's special?
My favorite of all times is the list of people who ought to be killed. And I watch it religiously. I mean, every time I am, like, let's say I'm in traffic and somebody's really just making me mad, you know what I mean? I go home and I want it. It is so, like you said, he has such a great master of the English language, but it is so detail oriented in my mind, and it is so perfect. And the way he explains it, you know, and the way he decides they need to be killed, it's so amazing. And you know, I'm younger, I'm 25, so I haven't really, I don't have that, you know, complex, like, or it's not a complex, but it's like, I don't have that complex knowledge of like Steve Martin, Martin Mull. But George Carlin is somebody who, no matter how old I get, I go back to that list and I'm like, he's right. And then when I meet those people, I'm like, you're one of those people who ought to be, you know, this and this and this. So it's so well done. And it's such a beautiful list. And it's so hilarious. And it's honestly, it's poetry. It gives me chills just thinking about it. It warms my heart. And it is just, it's amazing.
It brings up an interesting question that I wanted to hit on, because I was looking at, over the course of the weekend, I was looking at a lot of the earlier stuff that he had done, that a lot of stuff that brought back a lot of memories for me, and some that I'm sure, some routines that I'm sure we'll talk about. But he was calling out BS from very early on, but he seemed to get angrier as he got older. And because if you look at like some of the specials in succession, it's like he just gets angrier and angrier. And
I do wonder whether or not, I mean, obviously George Carlin is not advertising like killing anybody, right? Like, so I'm wondering like when it became more of a, I don't want to say a character, but it became sort of, I'm going to rant about this and you guys are going to, you understand what I'm ranting about, but you also understand that because I'm ranting about it, there's a sort of a double edge here. Do you guys feel that too?
I think in a lot of ways he tried to become the dirty old grandpa caricature. I some of my favorite people, like for example, one of my favorite actors is Nicolas Cage. And one thing that he's done is he has taken that over the top caricature that people make of him, and he's just adopted that and it's become who he is as an actor. And I think Carlin did something like that where he, you know, he was the guy that was, again, the free thinking and putting things together and really making you think. And then as you got into Life is Worth Losing and It's Bad for You, he really kind of became that dirty old man, which was funny and great as long as you kind of took it for that tongue-in-cheek way that it was meant to be. Like he had the one bit that he did where he had, I can't remember which one of the two it was on, because both of those albums are very similar. But it was the one where it's the bit about people and their annoying answering machine messages. And he has the bit that he does about how he's going to go over and be inappropriate to a small little girl. And obviously Carlin is not that type of man. Like he would never do that, but it's just that, like, but that's a dirty old man stereotype. Like that's what you think of. And it just, I think he just played into it and I think he had fun with it. And I think he knew his time was short and I don't think he cared anymore.
Yeah. One thing I did watch this weekend is the last HBO special that he did. It's Bad for You. And it's sort of ominous. I mean, it's almost like he just really knew.
Well, he had been sick for years though, dude. He, you know, had his first heart attack when he was like in his late 30s. And, you know, he just went from there, and he ran it into his bit that he was, you know, he was keeping track with George, with, Richard Pryor. And, you know, the only thing Richard Pryor had on top of him was that he burnt himself to, you know, pretty much.
Right.
Yeah. That last, special, the comedy special, It's Bad for You. That's one of my favorite pieces of his, is that show. And, Carlin, again, I was a fan since the 80s, and he toured nonstop, obviously. And he's one of those guys I always meant to get around to seeing. And as, oh, that night's not convenient, or I'm doing this, or it's not going to work. And the years went by, and I never saw him until when he was touring in 2008. And we finally pulled the trigger and got tickets and went and saw Carlin in Boston. This was on that tour that led to that special, It's Bad for You. And a friend of mine actually was opening for him that night. So that's what really convinced us to go see him. And we're going to see our friend open for Carlin. And that was an amazing performance. And I don't think he even smiled at the Boston show, at least. He was just in that angry mode. And I love how his comedy evolved over the decades, obviously from the clean cut in the early 60s and up through the hippie phase. And as his comedy became more political and he changed obviously so drastically, as we all know, and right up until the end when he got so much angrier and angrier in those final years and just pounding on government and hypocrisy and religion. And he was certainly a hardcore atheist as I am, and just was not putting up with any nonsense anymore. And just right up to the end. So it's certainly maybe not his pound for pound laughs best work ever, although it was still hilarious, but so powerful right up to the end.
I was thinking as I was watching It's Bad for You, I was thinking, man, there were several times where I was like, man, if you would just like, if you were alive today, still, today would kill you, because it's just like
he would have, yeah.
Things are not better. Like, like not from that perspective. Like I can't even imagine, you know, what, well, I can in some ways, well, what he exactly. would rant about today.
A lot of the things he was predicting and talking about and warning people about have come to light and come true.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing with George, like Kevin hit on the head. He went from a standard Borscht Belt comedian, very clean cut, until probably about 67, 68. And then he decided to take a break and he became counterculture. And that's when he really struck, you know, he became a voice for the counterculture movement. You know, that's when he grew his beard and started growing his hair out. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's when he, you know, started, you know, more and more of his albums started becoming more popular. And you had the, you know, FM AM, which he did. The AM was his very clean cut stuff. And then the FM was more of the counterculture stuff side too. It was a brilliant album. If you ever get a chance to listen to it.
And he was masterful at that. He was masterful. I mean, he was a guy that even though he looked like a hippie and could and was saying things that were against authority and against authority figures, like authority figures loved him. Like he would be on invited to all the top shows. I mean, he was a regular on Tony Orlando at dawn all the time. Like that's not something that, you know, that you would expect from. I mean, Lenny Bruce didn't get that treatment. Right. So it's he managed to like, you know, he would do all he would have his specials, but then he would have his acting career, which was completely separate. And he was able to, you know, sort of that's the same way he was able to do the children's shows, I think, because he could separate that. Nate, what's another strong segment or a bit that you like by Carlin?
So I was thinking about it while you were asking Ashley, and I was let me start by saying, so with Carlin, one of the things I did for the longest time was I just took all of his albums and I just put them on shuffle. So it was great because you didn't like his albums were front to back, wonderful, but all of his different like separated songs or tracks on the album were so well done in and of themselves, they stood alone. So putting it on shuffle was just a lot of fun to hear, especially as you go all the way back to things, you know, like On the Road, Class Clown, things like that, getting way back and then going up to the modern stuff. And just to hear how it still kind of blends together in ways like as we talked about the tones, different things like that. But it was a lot of fun when it comes to ones that stand out. Man, it's so tough. Names is a big one. Where he talks about the names of things. That's one that comes to mind a lot when he talks about the names of like CD motels. Are we allowed to swear on this show?
I'll bleep you. Don't worry. Okay.
Well, there's seven words that you can't say on the podcast. I think we all know what those are.
Right. Well, that's
can that, I say them.
That ties into tattoo. but yeah. So like when he talks about, you know, the sleep and F motel, and talking about how you go out like what is it like the sleep and F and roll over and get up out of bed and go out and he's like and you go to the vending machine and all they have is that one Diet Shasta orange that nobody wants. And like that was a good one, right? And then you get into where he's talking about how we use different words to describe different minorities, and that probably has to be If I have to pick one, that's probably my downright favorite, where he's talking about how we use the terms happens to be and openly. And it finishes off that bit where how Colin Powell is not openly black. Colin Powell is openly white. He just happens to be black. And it's just, I mean, again, so many things that take a jab at politics and social structure and the way that people think. And but yeah, I mean, as far as like the like little bits, there's just so many like complaints and sure. grievances where it talks about how there's a rooster and like you want to know what like there's a rooster on top of a barn or a cock. They're the same animal. And he's like, do you want to know why? And it's like, because if it was a sea, the wind would blow right through it. and, you know, like it's just so many laughable moments, so many amazing memories, like even just talking about it puts a smile on my face.
The item that you were getting to, I think, you know, a lot of what he talked about, it seemed like, and everybody can jump in here too, is his lack of, well, I mean, I think if I had to, I was looking at all the bits that he did when I was looking at some of his like greatest hits or whatever. And looking at, I pulled up a couple of different specials that he did on HBO and I was watching those. And I'm like, man, if there was one, if you had to like boil it down to like one thing that Carlin represented that he's about, it's that he has no tolerance for bullshit, right?
Right.
Like he just had no, like that's his thing. And he, when he points it out, sometimes it's quite obvious. And other times you think about it and you're like, wow, I never really thought about it that way before. But he's right. Like that's like he really has a knack of just getting down to the kernel of things. And like, why is this the way it is? It's stupid. Like it just doesn't make any sense. And yet, like, it's something that none of us, you know, you don't want to talk about observational humor. It's like right there in front of our, a lot of the stuff is right there in front of us. And yet he brings it to our attention in a way that it feels so original.
No, that's a good way to put it, because he was a comedian that he wanted you to think about what he was talking about. He completely, you know, everything he did were different takes on the English language, different ways to look at people. And he put people down, but he didn't degrade them. And that's what was great about him. And it's not like he was not somebody like, you know, somebody who was sarcastic or, you know, very a person who was not, you know, he was almost like one of those guys who wanted to you to better yourself and make you think for yourself, to open your mind. And that's why he talked about the thing, make you realize what was going on around you. And he did it with humor. And that was one of his strengths.
Yeah, I mean, most comedians I think of and that I'm usually drawn to are more storytellers. They can tell a really good story. And Carlin's, he's not telling stories so much as he's pointing out observations. And they really ring true. It's quite different than, I can't think of, offhand, I can't think of too many other people that are certainly as, at, well, there's nobody at his level, really. But I mean, just that good at it, you know?
Yeah. And when you say like observational comedy, that kind of brings to mind like Seinfeld. And obviously Carlin was not a Seinfeld type, but yeah, he wasn't so much telling stories as more attacking subjects. Like, here's a subject, let's dissect it, let's flip it around. And he was just so great at that. And when you just look at the pile of work that he left behind, the add up the minutes and hours, it's a staggering amount of work for a stand-up comedian that every couple of years, here's another hour I've got ready for HBO, and it's all new, all and such high level stuff. I think had his he's been derailed recently, but by being a creep, but Louis C.K. I think is a modern comparison, not on the level of Carlin, but he was in that similar vein, I think. You know, obviously we have to point out that's a problematic character at this point. But
if you want a good modern comparison that doesn't include harassing women, Jim Jeffries.
Is
for me the modern Carlin.
Yes, good answer.
When I listen to Jeffries, and especially like his take on Trump and everything else like that, to me, that is Carlin incarnate. Like that's what it would be like from what I hear. Like that's the biggest thing. I mean, we're coming up on 10 years of Carlin being gone. And when I see everything that's happening, I mean, regardless of where you stand politically, when I see everything that's going on, like that's the thing that I look at. And I'm like, man, if only he was here. Because he would have so much fun with all of this.
Yep.
Ashley, what were you gonna say?
I was gonna say I'd put Bill Burr as a close second, also. And I'm not sure if a lot of people agree with that, but when you watch his specials, he really has mastered the rant, with the explanation. And for me, Carlin, it's as if Carlin was sitting you down and giving you a lesson, and his mouth was like the whiteboard, the marker, and the eraser. And essentially, he was lecturing you on not just philosophy, but also the way things should be. And I think Bill Burr really, really is one of those people, for me at least, who I can see being a close second to Carlin. And that's just me, you know?
No, I agree, Ashley. That's a great example.
That is a fantastic way. Yeah.
I thought of Bill Burr as well. And again, Bill Burr is not on a Carlin level at this point. Maybe he'll get there someday. But yeah, he's certainly another guy operating in that vein, and Jim Jeffries as well. Well, you two came up with way better examples than me.
that's why they had him on the show.
Come on.
Exactly. the modern one that I keep thinking of, kind of is Carlin-esque, is Lewis Black. But Lewis is a little angrier, and he's deep and political. I mean, if he was to broaden himself out, then maybe, you know. But it's that kind. I mean, it's not, again, it's observational as opposed to, you know, story time. Although, Kevin, when you mentioned Seinfeld, I was kind of thinking, damn it, why didn't Carlin stay alive long enough that he could be on that, like, Comedians with Coffee on Cars or whatever show sure. like, with them? Because the two of them having a discussion, I would love that.
God, can you imagine how crotchety he would be now, though?
Oh, my goodness. It would be amazing, dude. Just think about it. And everything he's predicted is coming true. So it would almost be him with a mic for an hour just sitting there being like, I told you so.
I told you so.
I told you so.
I mean, you're right that he would be crotchety. But think about, okay, so to go back to bits a little bit really quick. The one, as far as not so much entertaining, but impressive for me, is Modern Man, the opening track of Life is Worth Losing. And if you think about the fact that he was 69 when he performed that. So, I mean, yeah, he's doing it every night and whatnot. But if you think about things that typically will strike elderly people, you know, memory loss, dementia, especially somebody who clearly did drugs when drugs were a thing, clearly drank when drinking was a thing, like at 69 and then again at 71 in 08, because, I mean, that was only recorded 3 months. He was recorded in March and he died in June.
Yeah.
So to have that frame of mind and to be able to just to basically just spew out poetry, like it was for a man of his age, like it was extremely impressive. So to touch on that, yeah, if he was still alive, I mean, he had his faculties up until 71. I mean, granted, we're 10 years out, so he'd be 81 this year. And but I mean, it didn't look like he was failing, at least in the mind. Like, obviously his body failed out on him, but when it came to his mind, I mean, he seemed to be all there, or at the very least his memory was.
It's fascinating to think about what he would be like today. Like, I think we'd be looking back. Gee, remember when he was 71 doing It's Bad for You? Remember what a good mood he was in back then? Such a positive attitude. Now, compared to where he is now.
He would be making Sam Kennison blush right now.
Pretty much. Yeah, so. His album would be F period U period C period K period. The album title would be For Your Crazy Kids,
right?
With your R being you are.
Well, I guess we just got the podcast episode name.
Kevin, what about you? Any particular bits or things you want to bring up regarding his career?
Well, let's think. I think we've hit a lot of the highlights from stand-up. One thing that I always think of, I'm a big Kevin Smith fan, and I like that Kevin Smith thought, and by the late 90s, you know, obviously George did not do a lot of movie work over his career. He did a few here and there. He had the Bill and Ted movies. But then by the late 90s, Kevin Smith was saying, why is no one putting George Carlin in the movies anymore? And Kevin decided to put him in every movie he did, which it turned out to only be, I think, three, right? He put him in Dogma and then just had kind of a goofy cameo in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. But then...
He was awesome in Jersey Girl.
Yeah, as I was just going to say, yeah. Mike, you're absolutely right. If you look at Jersey Girl, and Jersey Girl kind of got a bad rap. It got caught up in the Gigli, Ben Affleck, Jen Lopez backlash. But Jersey Girl is a nice, sweet movie. And Carlin has a real solid acting role in it. Like, he's not just doing a wacky character or a quick goofy cameo. He's through the whole movie in a relatively serious part as Affleck's father. And you really see a nuanced side to his acting ability that you did not get to see very much of.
Yeah, if you ever want to see really bad George Carlin acting, watch the George Carlin show that was on Fox. Was not good. What do you... Hey, played a cabbie. That's a stretch, right?
for anyone that's seen it, I mean, the line, yeah, I'll take a shot in the mouth. It'll people get me a couple hundred miles down the road. How is that not iconic for everyone? but no, yeah, he was so great in that movie for his little bit part. I wish that him and Carrie Fisher got a chance to interact in that movie.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And that was the nature of that movie. You know, that was a road movie with just celebrities doing little pop-up cameos throughout.
But he was great in Dogma. He was awesome in Dogma. Yeah. If only we had that kind of audience. You know, he just when in the Kevin Smith films, he was great. And that's the one great thing with George was that he did go into everything he did with gusto. He really did. He went up, he was a stand up and he was also, he really was an AM radio DJ back in the day. And that's where he got his start. And it just went from there. And it's pretty damn amazing. And he had one of the funniest jokes I have ever heard, you know, when he was, what am I doing? And what am I doing in New Jersey? That CD he did, or HBO special. And one of the best jokes in the world was that in that one, you know, he says, I had a great t-shirt I wanted to make, you know, it says, kiss her where it smells, take her to New Jersey. You know, it was just brilliant. And, you know, basically, you know, he talked about stories about his childhood growing up Catholic and having to go to Catholic school and how ridiculous it was, because by this time he was an atheist. And he ran into all religions, though. He didn't just beat up on Catholics. He beat up on Christians and Jews. And, you know, he didn't discriminate. He was an equal opportunist. Yes. For all that.
He was an equal opportunity offender.
Yeah, and he also beat up on Democrats and Republicans.
Yep.
Because he saw the stupidity in a lot of that.
Well, it's called out a lot of the extremism.
Well, exactly.
Side you were on.
His delivery, his panache, everything he did was so well planned out in his head. And I would have loved to have seen him in his, you know, when he's practicing these things or coming up for him. Hey, does this one stick? You know, does this one do? You know, what about this? How's that sound? You know, like that. And it was just great to see all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I would love to hear, like, not just seeing him do it, but because obviously with any stand-up comedian, when they're recording an album or a live special, it's, you know, they've done that bit a couple times. Like, they've perfected it. They've worked out the kinks. You know, kind of similar to, like, pro wrestling, right, where they'll dark match matches before they put them on TV or on a pay-per-view. So with a comedian, they'll do parts of that bit and they'll like intertwine it into stuff that they know people like. And it would have been incredible to be able to see or hear, you know, the lead up to what got recorded, to see how things organically changed and grew and parts he took out and parts he put back in, and just to be able to get into his mind and to experience that process.
One of the things that I was always disappointed about is recently we went out to Los Angeles to go to a concert and we had some extra time, but we weren't able to get to the Grammy Museum because they were doing a George Carlin exhibit there. And it was put on by his daughter, Kelly Carlin.
Oh, right, right.
And it was supposed to be amazing, and just the stuff they had. And they had some of him playing later years, but in smaller clubs, trying out his material. And that was it. It was just awesome. And I would have died to see that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think Kelly has done a lot of work to kind of carry on her dad's message and preserve a lot of what he did. And I've never met her, but friends of mine have interviewed her on different shows and events and things with the various skeptics groups, because he was certainly on board for that message of you know, looking out for people. And yeah, Kelly seems like a very cool lady from what I've heard from people who've met her.
I mean, how can Carlin be your dad and have you not be cool?
Right? That's right. I would love to have been a fly on the wall just for, well, multiple parenting lessons. Or, you know, imagine going home and George Carlin sitting on his couch, you know, watching TV like, hey. And just being a parent, because, you know, you think about your parents and how they raised you. She must have had the coolest freaking childhood, man. Like, you know what I mean? George Carlin's your dad, so obviously you're going to have tons of people getting on your nerves. But just having George Carlin as the person who is your role model that you directly look up to, I mean, that's an opportunity I can't even imagine. It beats anything, really, when you think about it.
Well, in some ways, we all are his children, right? So, I mean, and that's, I mean, it sounds silly and hokey to say, but I mean, it's in a lot of ways true. And the fact that I actually, you know, I was watching a lot of specials, I was kind of thinking, you know, I don't know, you know, it's been a long time. It's been almost like, what, 10 years now, right? Since we've been without him. And I just hope that he doesn't, you know, disappear, like, you know, and the fact that, you know, you guys are about, you know, a little bit of a generation behind like Mike and I and stuff. So it's like, that's kind of cool that's still a thing. So that's still, and I think certainly when you watch a lot of these, he's just as relevant today, even not more so than he was back in his heyday. So,
absolutely.
So, yeah, it's hard to believe, but we're getting down to the end of our time, but I do want to sort of shoot it around the room. What do you think is the legacy of Carlin? Like, what do you think of his legacy is? And I guess we'll start with, since we've been started with Ashley, we'll start with Ashley again.
Cool. Thanks, by the way. It's awesome to be first.
Gives me a kick. I don't mind.
It's nice to be the king.
Yeah, I think the one legacy for me, it's almost as if he's a prophet to people who aren't really in the system, you know. And I think of myself and my friends, and we're all college dropouts who are like, oh man, the education system's nonsense. You know, we're all, you know, we're kind of hippies and burnouts. But we see someone like George Carlin, and it's not only that he confirms what we've been thinking, but he's doing it and he's successful with it. So we are now able to be motivated, and not only motivated, but inspired by somebody who says the same things and who believes the same things we do. And we now know that there's a place for it and that we can do this. We don't have to be, as George Carlin said, indoctrinated into a system, you know? And so that's the legacy he's left, at least in my life and the lives of my friends around us.
Yeah. Good call. I like that. I like that a lot. So now we have to all think of something else and then try to top that, maybe. No, Nate?
In similar vein, I think maybe a little bit more abstract, though. I think if you have to boil it down, his legacy is to think and to question. Don't take things for face value. Don't fall for the bullshit. Don't just trust your superiors, whether it be parents or government or whatever, or your religious people, whatever it may be. You know, question and observe and look at the way that everything can be broken down. Look at the way that language can be broken down. Look at the way that life itself, and it all comes down to the thought, right? And to just be able to not be a drone and to experience life in the way that you want to and not the way that somebody else is trying to. And then he spices that up with, you know, some fancy words and some topical content, but it all really comes down to, like, just don't fall for the gag.
Yeah. Well done, Kevin.
Yeah. I am delighted to hear Ashley, who's a bit younger than a lot of us on the call, that someone, Ashley, of your age, is such a fan of Cartland and can go back and discover what's there. And that is wonderful. I love to hear that. Cartland obviously was so important and so influential, and he was not the only guy back then in the 60s and the 70s that was breaking new ground and doing important work in the world of comedy. But those other comics who you could say that about, and I'm thinking Lenny Bruce, Pryor, Mort Saul, Dick Gregory, who just passed away last year. There's some important kind of controversial figures in comedy, but their stuff is not that accessible and it does not stand the test of time. Like Carlin's work holds up. A lot of comedy does not age well. And his stuff really, really does. And I love that new generations can dip back and love it just as much as we did when it was coming out in the 70s, 80s, 90s. So that's certainly his legacy, and his legacy is going to stand in a way that few comedians, even comedians that were very important or very popular, not many can have that kind of a lasting impact.
Mike?
Gosh, I don't have anything else to say, pretty much. You know, you guys said it all for me. So good night. Now, Carlin is going to go through the ages because his work is fairly timeless, and that is the show of his genius. He basically came through and up through the ranks and separated himself from everybody else, and by being intelligent and not just being a stereotype Cheech and Chong type character. And that was what, you know, Ashley alluded to earlier. And that was what was great about him, was he spoke for everybody and he wanted to be there for everybody. And his frustration and his cynicism as he got older was because he saw everything that was happening around him in the world, and everything he was saying was coming true and was warning people of. And it was, his way was through humor. His way was, you know, sometimes it got a little too ranty later on in his career, but it still worked. And I think to this day, 10 years after his death, 50 years after he got his start, everything he does still has meaning, still has, you know, wonder to it. And every time I pack on a business trip or for vacation, I have a place for my stuff. So I'm happy.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, before we leave, I want to hear something from each one of you, a pick for, let's say, some of our listeners may be semi-familiar with Carlin. Some might be not familiar at all with him. So one thing from Carlin's that you can recommend that they either listen to, watch, whatever, and I will start so that Ashley has some time to think of something. I will start, and I'm going to say, you know, because we haven't even mentioned his books, and I know that he was very proud of his writings, particularly Brain Droppings is one that I would definitely suggest that everybody should go check out. It's available in audiobook as well. So, you know, but for a guy who was so into language, to see him put that actually into books. I mean, he didn't just churn out books that were, you know, basically written versions of his sketches. He actually put a lot of work into the language in his books, and he was very proud of them. And I definitely think that they are worthy of, they're not just a sidebar for him. They're something that I think everybody needs to check out as well. So now, Ashley, we'll go with you. What's one thing that that people should check out from George Carlin?
Complaints and Grievances, obviously. It's my favorite one. I think it just, like you guys said, he turned into this crotchety old man. But even during, I wasn't even 10 when Complaints and Grievances came out. And just to see, you know, just like an old guy who's like so angry and so it's inspired. It's, to me, it's like, as long as there's a skeptic, there's a Carlin fan. And that one really, really hits to me. It hits home when it comes to skepticism and just solidifying ideas of, I don't take bullshit shit. I think that one is just, I think for me, that's it.
Yeah, good call. Nate?
You know, I have to go with You Are All Diseased. It was the first front-to-back album of his that I heard, like I mentioned at the top. And it's what made me fall in love with his work. And front to back, it's a wonderful album. And the opening bit when he's going on the whole, like, how's everybody doing? Good. Well, fuck you. Just wanted to make you feel at home.
Right. Like, yes.
That resonated a lot with me and feeling at home. So it, You Are All Diseased is a wonderful starting point. It was before the turn of the millennium, and then you kind of go back from there or forward from there. And I think that's a wonderful starting point.
That might be my favorite set too. The sort of rooftop, where he's sort of like on the HBO special, that's the one where he's sort of on a rooftop, I think. Right. And I think out of all his specials, that's the one I like cling to when I think of him. Cause it just seems like old man screaming from the rooftops, you know, Kevin.
Well, a couple of thoughts. I'm going to go right up to the end, to the bitter end. And that's I'm glad you mentioned the books, Mike, and Brain Droppings was certainly the biggest, I think, of his books. But the final book, which was released posthumously, was called Last Words. And that one, it's been several years since I read it. But as I recall, it was very autobiographical and goes into his childhood and kind of, you know, growing up on the streets in New York and getting in trouble in school. And as Mike mentioned before, his military career, Air Force and radio, got into radio. And it takes you through the early stuff, which is great. And as I said before, I think my favorite of the specials might be that final special, It's Bad For You, both because it was just such an intense finale of what he'd been building towards, just getting angrier over the course of his career. And also just on a personal note, because I was at one of his final performances on that tour. So I have that personal connection to that work as well. And I looked up something too. Let me throw in a Flopcast plug right now. I went back into the archives, but if you go back to my Goofy Show Flopcast episode 150, that's where we interview our friend Rob Paravonian, is the comedian who opened for several of Carlin's shows in his last few years, including that show in Boston. And Rob shared several really, really nice anecdotes about he got to spend some time with Carlin backstage before the shows several times. And George was very nice to him in several different ways. And he tells us all about that. So if you just want to hear some personal stories from someone who worked with him, just about what a sweet guy he could be off stage, check that out too.
Very cool. That is awesome. Yeah, we definitely want to show a link to that in our show notes too. So, and Mike, we'll leave it with you. What's one thing?
Everything. No, literally, it's almost too vast to say just one thing with George, because there's so much greatness in all his different work he did. I remember, you know, when I was in college, they came out with Carlin Gold on CD, which reissued, I think it was his first three CDs or records at the time. And it was great. But for me, it had to be in Class Clown, because that is pure comedy gold. And it is Carlin at his best, where he's talking about him growing up, his seeing about, you know, politics and talking about Nixon at the time. And it was funny how his humor went from Nixon, then into Reagan, and then into Bush and even Clinton and all the way through. And but it starts here. This is almost one of his first, and it's some of his best work. And this is what one of the first I actually let William listen to after he got old enough to start, you know, hearing curse words other than Judy, you know, is awesome.
That reminds me. I mean, I wonder if they've started they have re-released some of his vinyl.
I'm sure they have. You probably can find. I'm looking right now on Amazon through, you know, esonetwork.com, plug.
Of course,
the only way to get to it. You can find some of his formats in vinyl and such. Like, I know A Place for His Stuff is available in vinyl. I'm looking at a couple of different ones, and you could even get audio cassettes still of his stuff. How's awesome. That to make you feel old?
Well, then, and as Mike said, all the stuff that we mentioned, most of the stuff that we mentioned, you can get from the Amazon store. If you go to the ESO link, just click on that, and that'll take you right to it. So please help support the station that way. So, well, very cool. This was a lot of fun, guys, and it went by way too fast. So there's certainly more out there that we could have mentioned. And so, yeah, this is... Carlin's going to be somebody that we're going to be talking about, hopefully, forever. So thanks, guys. And we will be right back with the ESO Network Con Report.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela. And this week, this geek girl is talking about the Celine Dion song, Ashes. So, yeah, you heard that right. I'm going to talk about a Celine Dion song, which, if you haven't heard yet, she did a beautiful ballad called Ashes for the Deadpool 2 soundtrack. And if you haven't seen the music video, you need to go watch it right now. Just stop everything and go watch this music video. I know we all did not expect Celine Dion to do a song for Deadpool 2, and it's perfect. Like, it's everything we could have wished for in a music video to go along with this song. The song is beautiful. Celine Dion is beautiful in the video. Deadpool is hilarious. And the ending part between Celine and Deadpool is hilarious. You've got to love that turn it up to 11 joke. It is so funny. So again, go watch it. It's funny and it's super easy to find on YouTube. So you really have no excuse other than you're just not going to go watch it. So thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Network Con Report.
Con! Well, there's a few conventions happening at the end of May where you can find ESO Network folks, starting with May 24th through the 27th. It's MomoCon. Huge, huge, huge convention here in Atlanta, Georgia. I will be there in Artist Alley along with Tiki Zombie artist Peter Cutler. You'll also find Alex Autry roaming around. I think he's here. I think he's going to do it both days, but I'm not sure. So keep your eyes peeled for Alex. There's also going to be a lot of other friends at the station there, too. It's going to be a great time, so hope to see you there. And also May 25th through the 27th is Animazement. That's in Raleigh, North Carolina. Geek girl Angela Pritchett will be attending that show with her ukulele in tow. And in Houston is the Big Comic Palooza. Big, big, big show. Metal Geeks, Carrie Gordon is going to be there, as well as Amanda's going to be there as well, Mike. Is that true? Mandy? From the Cast Request, right? She's going to be there too, I believe.
Yes, sir. As far as I've heard, Mandy will be there at the con because she's local to Houston also.
Yeah. So look for them at that show. It's a big, big, big show. So that's a lot to, it's going to be like Where's Waldo there. But one of these days we're going to get out to Houston. But for now, that's all the events that we have in May. June, real quick, June 1st through the 3rd is Con Carolinas. Angela Pritchett will be at that show. That's in Charlotte, Carolina. June 8th through the 10th is the Lizard Man Festival in Bishopville, South Carolina. Matthew from Myopia will be there. He'll be selling his new book. I believe it's The Thing in the Woods. So get a copy of the new book from Matthew. June 9th through the 10th is Con Castaburus. That's where Mike and I will be. And representing Earth Station Who will be Mary Ogle. She will be at that show as well. So the three hosts of ESW will be there. There's also going to be some other friends of the station there as well. We're very excited to be returning to Huntsville. So thank you, Matthew, and everybody who's there for inviting us once again. It's a great time. So can't wait to go back to Huntsville for Con K. And then last but certainly not least, June 29th through July 1st is the Fanboy Expo in Knoxville, Tennessee. Alex Autry will be attending that one as well. He's very excited, And we hope to have a special interview with the people behind Fanboy Expo so we can tell you all about that show. But in the meantime, you can find links to that show as well as all the other shows in our show notes that we're going to be at. So if you've got a show that you want to promote or you want us to rant or rave about, please reach out to us because we love talking about conventions.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. I want to thank our guests for being here and talking all about George Carlin. Kevin, thank you so, so much.
This was great, guys. This was a subject I was absolutely thrilled to get to talk about. Always a pleasure. I'll up here on the station anytime you need me.
Well, you know, you have that bug in here now since we found out that you're listening to our show on, you know, and putting it up on your podcast.
We are always watching.
That's what that stuffed chicken over there is doing. Got it.
Absolutely. I will throw in a plug for my show here on the ESO Network, if I could, and that is the Flopcast, which is a very ridiculous little goofy corner of the ESO Network where we do a show every week. We just hit our six-year anniversary.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Which is crazy. We've done a show every single week for the last 6 years, and we've got some fun stuff coming up this summer. We have a lot of travel. We have a lot of concerts. We have a lot of conventions coming up that we'll be talking about, so it's going to be a busy few months coming up, and find us here on the ESO Network.
Yay! Ashley, you made it through your first episode with us.
Go me!
Yay, you! Anything you want to plug?
Of course, man. Once again, thank you guys so much for having having me on here. It was awesome to get to talk about George Carlin, and to be a young Carlinite is like awesome. So shout out to the millennials here. But I'm definitely going to plug Who's This Network. It is a network for people. It's basically a giant give back project of collaborative. It's a collaborative effort from many different content creators. And what we do is we teach you how to start a business without any money. And I know that's a lot of people listening right now because you're saying, I want to do this, but I have no money. Well, that's not an excuse for us, and we try and help you out the best as possible. We are building an app currently that you can download on your phone. And if you go to blog.whosthis.network, you'll be able to read all of our content. Our video is not up yet because, once again, we're building the app, and we want to have a huge launch party on July 18th. So if you're around, definitely look it up on Facebook, Who's This Network. Who's this with an apostrophe S and a question mark after this.
That is amazing. You're awesome. I'm looking forward to hearing what you come up with.
Oh, me too.
That's what I say every week, so it's cool. Nate, dude, it was awesome to talk to you.
I appreciate it. And as well, thanks very much for having me on. It was a ton of fun. And, you know, growing up listening to Carlin and whatnot, it was great to reflect, especially so close to the 10-year anniversary of his death. So It's very cool. I run a podcast network called Inked Geek Studios. We do three or four shows a week. One of our shows is every other week. We do a show called Mind of a Geek, which is an interview style podcast. It's all about the guest, and we have a ton of fun on that show. We do a show on Sunday nights called Movie Busters. It's your typical movie podcast. I mean, I'm not going to oversell it because there's a million movie podcasts, but it's me and my buddy, and we love movies, and we talk about it. Monday, every other Monday is a show called Indie Case Files, where we talk about and review two indie video games that we have been playing on Twitch for the 2 weeks prior. And then we kind of go over those and talk about the developers and kind of observe the passion for indie video games that the AAA video games seem to have kind of lost over the years. And then our newest show is Tuesday nights at 10 o'clock, and it's called Solutions to Fix the Universe, or STFU. And that is a lot of fun, and we cover...
See what you did there.
We cover everything. Like, nothing is off the table on that show. We've discussed fandom and tribalism. We've discussed, like, modern privacy and what it means for people to everything else. And starting this Tuesday, we are getting into a monthly project we're going to be doing, and we are going to be talking about the seven deadly sins. We're going to do a different sin every month. And we're going to be going in the Dante's Inferno order. So Tuesday night, we're starting with Lust. And all of our shows can be watched live on Twitch at twitch.tv/inkedgeekstudios. Or you can subscribe to them on your podcast platform of choice. And really quick, I want to give a shout out to my photography. I'm a new amateur photographer. I do drone photography and independent wrestling photography. If you want to check out that, you can go to xsxphotography.com. And I do blog posts up there and put all of my work up there as well.
Cool.
That is awesome, man. Congratulations. That sounds great stuff. And Mr. Mike, you made it through another one.
We did. And this one was really fun. As always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you're going to shout out about this week?
I do want to give a shout out to artist extraordinaire and musician Jazz Ingram. As many people may know, Jazz is a member of the Possum Kingdom Ramblers, great friends of ours. And they've actually worked on a song for the new Tiki Zombie soundtrack called Cthulhuow. It's actually the title track of the new album. And Jazz has designed these little enamel pins because they're all the rage. But this one is really cool. It's a Cthulhuow, Cthulhu playing a ukulele. It's adorable. It's by Jazz Ingram. And he designed these nice pins. And I am pleased to have them with me at MomoCon upcoming. So if you guys see me at MomoCon, come on over and I will have the Cthulhuow pins for sale. And if I have any left over, I will be selling them everywhere else I go. So, but I want to give a shout out to Jazz because they just look, they look adorable. And I'm really happy with the song. And now I'm really happy with this pin. So great stuff.
That is awesome, man. That is really, really awesome. My shout out real quick goes to the TV show Black Lightning. I actually got finally up to date and watched the full season, and they did an amazing job on the CW. I can't wait till we actually get around to doing a full episode dedicated to Black Lightning. It was a lot of fun, and actually, compared to some of the other Berlantiverse shows this season, I think it was the most solid in a lot of ways, and I hope they continue with season two, and very excited about that. And my second little shout out is to the TV show Lost in Space. Talked about it real briefly as a shout out. They just announced today that they are going to be getting a second season. So yay Netflix for bringing back Lost in Space. Very yes. excited about it. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to hear Danger Will Robinson again sooner than later, hopefully. So we will see that. And of course, speaking of seeing that later, we are going back to the movies again next week when we talk all about Deadpool 2. That's right, folks. The Merc with the Mouth is back once again. And yes, he brings Cable along. You know, he didn't want Satellite. He wanted Cable. What can you say? It's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens. Can this keep up with what they did in the first movie? Or is it going to be even better? Or is it going to be the sophomore slump? We will find out.
And will it beat Avengers?
Dude. You really had to go there. Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to wait and see. So we'll have our regular crew to talk all about it, and it should be very interesting to see what happens. Of course, we want to hear from you guys. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com, or we have a phone in line where you can call us at 404-963-9057. If we'd like what you say, we might actually even put it up on the air. You never know. You can help support the station by going to any of the iPlayers, you know, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or a couple other places, wherever you could find fine podcasts. And you know what, folks? Subscribe. Tell your friends about it. You know, leave feedback. We would love it. We would do anything for feedback on this show. Well, almost anything. Mike, you know, he might do anything. But me, I have my standards. So we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, we know. You'll do anything for some feedback. So it's cool, but we'd love to hear from you guys. We really do. And, you know, you leaving feedback is how, you know, people find us, how people help subscribe to the network. And, you know, speaking of subscribing to the network, we got some big network news coming up very, very soon that we'll be, you know, talking about probably in the next couple of weeks, where, you know, you'll be having more access to Earth Station One and the other shows of the ESO network. Really going to be a fun experience with that. But, you know, you could also help support the station by going to our Patreon and just go to esonetwork.com right at the top of the page, there's a link to the Patreon where you could get by with just as little as a dollar a month. You could help support the station. And, you know, you get free content starting at $5 a month. And even we have new stuff coming for our $10 a month subscribers. That's going to be coming your way very, very soon. So it should be very interesting to see. I think I've said very too many times there. But, hey, it's very cool. Hey,
you're going to start another drinking game, aren't you?
Of course I am. You know, we have the Dragon Con drinking game. We might as well have the very interesting, you know, how many times can we say very? Take a shot. I like that. That could work. We also have the Amazon store, and we, of course, have the TeePublic t-shirts. All that could be found at esonetwork.com. All right, I'm out of here. I'm tired. We've talked a lot about George Carlin. I might go actually listen to some more Carlin CDs. I think it should be a lot of fun. But until then, my name is Mike Faber, and we will see you here next time on the Air Station 1 podcast. Peace. And we're done. Ta-da.
Yay.
All right.
We survived.
Ooh. I appreciate that. Good to have a little sip of this. The water, I assume, is still safe to drink in New York, huh? Actually, I got to be fair with you. I'm only setting you up a little bit. It's just a not a trick question, but it's just a setup because I don't really care about the water, to tell you the truth. I just love to hear the answer to that question. I ask that question everywhere I go. Everywhere I go, I say, how's the water? Haven't gotten a positive answer yet. Not one. Last year, I was in 40 states, 100 cities. Not one audience was able to say to me, yes, enjoy some of our fine local water. It is pure and it is good. Of course, I know a lot of people don't talk that way anymore, but nobody trusts the local water supply. Nobody. And that amuses me. I like that. I admit I'm a bit perverted, but it amuses me that no one can really trust the water anymore. And the thing I like about it the most is it means the system is beginning to collapse, and everything is slowly breaking down. I enjoy chaos and disorder. Not just because they help me professionally. They're also my hobby. You see, I'm an entropy fan. I'm an entropy fan. When I first heard of entropy in high school science, I was attracted to it immediately. When they told me that in nature, all systems are breaking down, I thought, what a good thing. What a good thing. Perhaps I can make some small contribution in this area myself. And of course, it's not just in nature. In this country, the whole social structure just beginning to collapse. You watch. Just beginning now to come apart at the edges and the seams. And the thing I like about that is that it means it makes the news on television more interesting, makes the television news more exciting, makes it more fun. I watch television news for one thing and one thing only, entertainment. That's all I want from the news, entertainment. You know my favorite thing on television? Bad news. Bad news and disasters and accidents and catastrophes. I want to see some explosions and fires. I want to see shit blowing up and bodies flying around. I'm not interested in the budget. I don't care about tax negotiations. I don't want to know what country the fucking Pope is in. But you show me a hospital that's on fire and people on crutches are jumping off the roof, and I'm a happy guy! I'm a happy guy! I'm a happy guy! I want to see a paint factory blowing up. I want to see an oil refinery explode. I want to see a tornado hit a church on Sunday. I want to see some guy running through the Kmart with an automatic weapon firing at the clerks. I want to see thousands of people in the street killing policemen. I want to hear about a nuclear meltdown. I want to know the stock market dropped 2,000 points in one day. I want to see people under pressure. Sirens, flames, smoke, bodies, graves being filled, parents weeping, exciting shit. My kind of TV. I just want some entertainment. It's just the kind of guy I am. It's the kind of guy I am. You know what I love the most? When big chunks of concrete and fiery wood are falling out of the sky and people are running around trying to get out of the way. Exciting shit. That's why I watch auto racing. That's the only reason I watch auto racing. I'm waiting for some accidents, man. I want to see some cars on fire. I don't care about a bunch of redneck jack-offs driving 500 miles in a circle. 500 miles in a circle? Children can do that, for Christ's sakes. Doesn't impress me. I want to see some schmuck with his hair on fire running around punching his own head, trying to put it out. I want to see the pits explode. I want to see a car doing a 200-mile-an-hour cartwheel. Hey, where else besides auto racing am I going to see a 23-car collision and not be in, the son of a bitch? And if a car flies out of control, lands in the stands and kills 50 spectators, fine. Fuck them. Serves them right. They paid to get in. Let them take their chances with everybody else. Just means more fun for me. More fun for me. Hey, at least I admit it. At least I admit it. Most people won't admit to those feelings. Most people see something like that on television. They'll say, oh, isn't that awful? Isn't that too bad? Lying asshole. Lying assholes. You love it and you know it. Explosions are fun. And hey, the closer the explosion is to your house, the more fun it is. Did you ever notice that? Sometimes you have the TV on and you're working around the house. Some guy comes on television and says, 6,000 people were killed in an explosion today. You say, where, where? He says, in Pakistan. You say, oh, fuck Pakistan. Too far away to be any fun. But if he says it happened in your hometown, you'll say, whoa, hot shit. Come on, Dave, let's go look at the bodies. Let's go look at the bodies. I love bad news. I love bad news. Hey, the more bad news there is, the faster this system collapses. Fine by me. Fine by me. Don't bother my ass. Don't bother my ass, none. I'm glad the water sucks. I'm glad it sucks. You know what I do about it? I drink it. Unless it really smells. If it really smells a lot like sulfur, then I might buy a soda. But it's got to be a soda loaded with chemical additives. I like a lot of chemical additives in the things I eat and drink. See, I'm not one of these people who's worried about everything. You got people like this around you. Country's full of them now. People walking around all day long, every minute of the day, worried about everything. Worried about the air, worried about the water, worried about the soil. Worried about insecticides, pesticides, food additives, carcinogens. Worried about radon gas, worried about asbestos. Worried about saving endangered species. Let me tell you about endangered species, all right? Saving endangered species is just one more arrogant attempt by humans to control nature. It's arrogant meddling. It's what got us in trouble in the first place. Doesn't anybody understand that? Interfering with nature. Way over 90% of all the species that have ever lived on this planet, ever lived, are gone. They're extinct. We didn't kill them all. They just disappeared. That's what nature does. They disappear these days at the rate of 25 a day. And I mean regardless of our behavior. Irrespective of how we act on this planet, 25 species that were here today will be gone tomorrow. Let them go gracefully. Leave nature alone. Haven't we done enough? We're so self-important. So self-important. Everybody's going to save something now. Save the trees. Save the bees. Save the whales. Save those snails. And the greatest arrogance of all, save the planet. What? Are these fucking people kidding me? Save the planet? We don't even know how to take care of ourselves yet. We haven't learned how to care for one another. We're going to save the fucking planet? I'm getting tired of that shit. Tired of that shit. I'm tired of fucking Earth Day. I'm tired of these self-righteous environmentalists, these white bourgeois liberals who think the only thing wrong with this country is there aren't enough bicycle paths. People trying to make the world safe for their Volvos. Besides, environmentalists don't give a shit about the planet. They don't care about the planet. Not in the abstract, they don't. Not in the abstract, they don't. You know what they're interested in? A clean place to live. Their own habitat. They're worried that someday in the future they might be personally inconvenienced. Narrow, unenlightened self-interest doesn't impress me. Besides, there is nothing wrong with the planet. Nothing wrong with the planet. The planet is fine. The people are fucked. Difference. Difference. The planet is fine. Compared to the people, the planet is doing great. Been here 4.5 billion years. Do you ever think about the arithmetic? Planet has been here 4.5 billion years. We've been here, what, 100,000? Maybe 200,000? And we've only been engaged in heavy industry for a little over 200 years. 200 years versus 4.5 billion. And we have the conceit to think that somehow we're a threat? That somehow we're going to put in jeopardy this beautiful little blue-green ball that's just a-floating around the sun? The planet has been through a lot worse than us. Been through all kinds of things worse than us. Been through earthquakes, volcanoes, plate tectonics, continental drift, solar flares, sunspots, magnetic storms, the magnetic reversal of the poles, hundreds of thousands of years of bombardment by comets and asteroids and meteors, worldwide floods, tidal waves, worldwide fires, erosion, cosmic rays, recurring ice ages, and we think some plastic bags and some aluminum cans are going to make a difference. The planet isn't going anywhere. We are. We're going away. Pack your shit, folks. We're going away. And we won't leave much of a trace either. Thank God for that. Maybe a little styrofoam. Maybe. Little styrofoam. Planet will be here and we'll be long gone. Just another failed mutation. Just another closed-end biological mistake. An evolutionary cul-de-sac. The planet will shake us off like a bad case of fleas. A surface nuisance. You want to know how the planet's doing? Ask those people at Pompeii who are frozen into position from volcanic ash. How the planet's doing. Want to know if the planet's all right? Ask those people in Mexico City or Armenia or 100 other places buried under thousands of tons of earthquake rubble if they feel like a threat to the planet this week. How about those people in Kilauea, Hawaii, who build their homes right next to an active volcano and then wonder why they have lava in the living room? The planet will be here for a long, long, long time after we're gone, and it will heal itself, it will cleanse itself, because that's what it does. It's a self-correcting system. The air and the water will recover, the Earth will be renewed, and if it's true that plastic is not degradable, well, the planet will simply incorporate plastic into a new paradigm, the Earth plus plastic. The Earth doesn't share our prejudice towards plastic. Plastic came out of the Earth. The Earth probably sees plastic as just another one of its children. Could be the only reason the Earth allowed us to be spawned from it in the first place. It wanted plastic for itself. Didn't know how to make it. Needed us. Could be the answer to our age-old egocentric philosophical question, why are we here? Plastic. Asshole. So, the plastic is here. Our job is done. We can be phased out now. And I think that's begun. Don't you think that's already started? I think, to be fair, the planet sees us as a mild threat, something to be dealt with, and the planet can defend itself in an organized collective way, the way a beehive or an ant colony can, a collective defense mechanism. The planet will think of something. What would you do if you were the planet? How would you defend yourself against this troublesome, pesky species? Let's see, viruses. Viruses might be good. They seem vulnerable to viruses. And viruses are tricky, always mutating and forming new strains whenever a vaccine is developed. Perhaps this first virus could be one that compromises the immune system of these creatures. Perhaps a human immunodeficiency virus, making them vulnerable to all sorts of other diseases and infections that might come along. And maybe it could be spread sexually, making them a little reluctant to engage in the act of reproduction. Well, that's a poetic note. And it's a start. And I can dream, can't I? See, I don't worry about the little things. Bees, trees, whales, snails. I think we're part of a greater wisdom than we will ever understand. A higher order. Call it what you want. Know what I call it? The big electron. The big electron. Whoa. 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 It doesn't punish. It doesn't reward. It doesn't judge at all. It just is. And so are we. For a little while. Thanks for being here with me for a little while tonight. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Take care of yourself.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.